Was there one person in particular or one episode on the Nikki Haskell show that stands out to you as your favorite? What was the concept for the show once it became the Nikki Haskell show?
So it was a celebrity interview show. I went out and I shot all the fashion shows. I was the first person to put fashion on television.
When you interviewed Donald, did you ever have any idea that he would become president of the United States?
You know, Michael Jackson was a friend of mine. He says, will you come with me tomorrow? You're the only one I can go shopping with. So they picked me up and Michael's in the car and he's dressed like Spider-Man.
What do you think of the way that people treat Harry and Meghan?
I'm not a big fan of Meghan.
Are you dating? What does your knight in shining armor look like? And what would be your advice for dating right now?
Get dressed and go out and have a good time. Don't punish yourself.
You are the hottest and sexiest and most romantic man in town. You really do it to the ladies out there.
That's why I wonder why I'm here and you're out there.
Welcome back to Misunderstood. I'm your host, Rachel Yucatel. I have a really exciting episode for you guys today. Nikki Haskell is a trailblazing socialite, entrepreneur, and television personality whose life has been a whirlwind of glamour, innovation, and larger-than-life experiences. Known as one of the original influencers before the term even existed, Nikki carved out her niche in the 1970s and 80s by blending her natural charisma with a savvy business sense and a front-row seat to the most exclusive events of the era. As the host of The Nikki Haskell Show, she offered viewers a rare glimpse into the high society lives of celebrities, moguls, and cultural icons, cementing her reputation as a trusted insider in the world of fashion, art, and nightlife. Beyond her television career, Nikki's entrepreneurial ventures, from pioneering diet products to health and wellness innovations, reflect her drive to inspire and empower others to live vibrantly. A close confidant of bold-faced names like Andy Warhol, Donald Trump, and Michael Jackson, Nikki has always been at the epicenter of influence and intrigue. Her story is one of reinvention, resilience, and an enduring passion for celebrating life to its fullest. Whether rubbing shoulders at Studio 54 or launching cutting-edge products, Nikki Haskell remains a captivating symbol of timeless chic and entrepreneurial spirit. You see her now all over social media, and she is bringing back the Nikki Haskell Show in the beginning of January. Please get excited for my conversation with Nikki Haskell. Nikki Haskell, it is such an honor to have you here on Misunderstood. I feel like I need to add you to that intro of people that I've had on my show.
What a lot of famous people you had. Congratulations.
Who was my favorite? Oh my God. Well, I will tell you, I book every single guest that I have on here, and I have a specific, you know, method to my madness. It's like a variety show, which I know you are very familiar with. But so I love every guest. I find them so interesting. But for me, Rudy Giuliani was a huge one for me. Before I started my program, I knew that that is somebody who fell into the category of my show, which is people that have been reduced to a headline. And I felt like I wanted people to understand their mission a little different, right? Their narrative. So for me, you know, my fiance died in September 11th, and Rudy and I had never met, but shared that day of New York, right? And I bought a dog 2 days after September 11th, and I named the dog Rudy Giuliani. And that dog stayed with me as the man in my life for almost 20 years. And so to me, it was such an honor to meet Rudy and show Rudy, my dog Rudy's picture. And just, I had him only speak on 9/11. I didn't have him talk about the politics and all the stuff. And he was so eloquent, so captivating, and it was one of our best episodes we've ever had. So to me, that was my favorite.
Good. I like to hear that, because I think he was the best mayor we ever had in New York.
For sure. Absolutely, for sure. Now, I'm going to get into your show in a little bit, but now that you're asking me this question, was there one person in particular or one episode on the Nikki Haskell Show that stands out to you as your favorite?
Well, I was very fortunate because I got to go to the Philippines with the Marcoses, and that was really an amazing experience. But, you know, listen, I'm the first one that ever interviewed Donald and Ivana. And, you know, that was great. Donald was a huge supporter of the Nikki Haskell Show when I first started. Mm-hmm. And I was the first person that ever interviewed him. And I interviewed Andy Warhol, which has been in a million different documentaries. And just to get an interview with Andy Warhol is because he was very, because I'm in all the diaries and all of his party books and things. And he was great fun. I actually liked just about everybody I ever interviewed. And so, a lot of really good.
When you interviewed Donald, did you ever have any idea that he would become president of the United States?
You know, I met Donald in like 1972, 73. And I was a stockbroker. You know, I was among the first five female stockbrokers in the world. And I worked at Drexel Burnham. And I went to a club one night, this club that we belonged to called Le Club. It was a private club. Mm-hmm. And Donald walked in. And I said to the maitre d', who is that? And he said, oh, he's a new member. His name is Donald Trump. I said, I want to meet him. He said, I don't even know him. This is the first time he's ever been in the club. So about a week later,
you wanted to meet him. Why? Because he had an air about him?
I thought he was handsome and cool and sort of my type, you know, blonde, tall blondes. So I wanted to meet him. And then they came in again another week and I asked him again. I said, is there any way that I could meet Donald Trump? And he said, no, I really don't know him well enough. And about 3 weeks later, Roy Cohn gave a dinner party at 21. And I either sat next to Donald or one seat away. And by the end of that, we were best friends. So I was friendly with Donald from day one.
Wow.
And he didn't like press at all in those days. Can you imagine? That changed. But then when we started to build Trump Tower, I did the groundbreaking. I did the topping off. I did the opening party. I've spent a tremendous amount of time on that project with Donald.
Are you still friendly?
When he met Ivana, the first night he met her, we doubled and she became my best friend. So I was always there. I was there during the Mar-a-Lago days. I was there during the Atlantic City days. So I was, it's a lifelong friendship.
And you're still friendly now, I take it.
I'm still friendly now. In fact, I was just in his company. They did a fundraiser right before the election. Oh, I went to Madison Square Garden for that big rally that they did there.
Oh, right. Yeah.
So that was quite fun. So yeah, no, I mean, I'm planning on interviewing him again because I'm going to do a podcast now, the Nikki Haskell Show Revisited.
I know. I can't wait. That would be amazing. You can revisit all your old people that you met way back when, decades before.
Well, I was going to do a show. We did a pilot for it called Flashback to the Future, where I interviewed all the old people that I re-interviewed. But the person that produced it never got it together. Oh. But I will do a lot of that.
Well, I think that sounds amazing.
Yeah, so that was sort of fun.
Yeah. But,
fortunately, most of the people that I've interviewed with, I'm friendly with.
Right.
You know, so like Joan Collins. You know, unfortunately, a lot of them have passed away. Clive Davis is fabulous. I mean, I spent half my life with Clive.
Right.
You know, so.
I just interviewed Cindy Adams when I was in New York last. And yeah, I was going to say, I feel like you guys would be friends. She has been through everything. She tells great stories, but she tells a story about how she was with Donald and Roy Cohn. I wonder if it was the same time you were, where Roy was like, he's going to run the world one day. And she remembers.
When I used to call the house to speak to Ivana, Ivana was not a phone person. So Donald would answer the phone in the morning. And I would talk with him and he'd say, enough about me. Let's talk about you. What do you think about me? But during the conversation, many times he mentioned that he wanted to be president. And Ivana even became an American citizen because Donald wanted to run for president.
Oh, wow.
And this was 1981.
Yeah.
So it was always in the back of his mind.
Amazing. All right. So I want to get to your past because there's so much to catch up on. But I do really quickly because people, you are kind of everywhere online, on social media. But you've been an innovator in so many fields. And we will talk about it in a second. But what do you credit as your staying power for this long, keeping people's interest, knowing how to connect with people? Is there something that you would say is the one thing that you know how to do really well?
You know, I'm a people person. Mm-hmm. You know, and everybody says, everybody knows that Nikki knows everybody. But it started when I was very young, because when I was a stockbroker, I knew everyone. Then I had my television show and I met a whole new, but I've always known a lot of people and I've always put people together. I've done great jobs with, you know, not necessarily fixing people up, but putting people into business deals, right. Putting people into different situations, introducing people to each other. You know, if you're a people person, you're a people person, your family were people persons. And that's your upbringing. That's what you do. Some people meet people, they don't want anybody even talk to them. They keep them to themselves, you know. I introduce everybody to everybody, and it's my great pleasure. And I love it. And when I had the show, it worked out so well because the show was what kept the show going was I used to give a party every Friday night. And the clubs would pay for the party. And it was, and I would give a party for a movie premiere, a birthday party, a book review. You know, so every Friday night, there was a huge guest list of celebrities that came through the clubs that I gave. And that's how the show stayed on the air.
Wow. All those years.
So I met so many people. I was giving 6 parties a month. And it was wild. It was wild.
Unbelievable.
And it was great fun. Don't forget, those days there was no such thing as emails. We had to make the invitations. I mean, I used to have to go 3 o'clock in the morning to the post office on 42nd Street to pay the guy off to please put my mail on. Because the people would pay. I mean, it was a challenge. And I had the DuPonts, Richard and Robert DuPont worked for me, and Cornelia Guest worked for me. And somehow we got all the shows on the air. It was a miracle.
So explain to people, though, how you got into this. Like, as a child, as a little Nikki, well, first of all, do you have any siblings? Give us a background on your life. Who were you raised by? Where were you raised?
I was born in Chicago. Mm-hmm. I was a champion horseback rider. I held every championship in the Midwest in 3-gated and 5-gated open stake riding.
Wow.
Then when I was 13, and I was also under scholarship to the Chicago Art Institute. And then we moved to New York. We moved from L.A. we were from Chicago to L.A. in 1954. And the day I started the 8th grade, my father died. So I was brought up by my mother, who was the coolest person of all times. And I, even in spite of the fact that my father died when I was very young, I had a great mother and a great time. And I have a younger brother who's 6 years younger than I am, who lives in Aspen and has 3 children. But basically I'm, you know, and I have a cousin, that lives in New York, Margot Levy, who's not only my cousin, but my attorney and my closest friend. And I have a very small family. But when I got out of high school, I was just going to grow up, get married, live happily ever after.
Right.
You know, my mother, the work word was never used in my house. You know, so I was married and divorced twice to the same person. And the first time I was.
Wait, why? Were you madly in love or you hated him?
I don't know. I was very young. I was like 19 years old. But when I got divorced, the first time I took $18,000 and ran it into $2 million in the market, like a fluke. It was like, I had no idea what I was doing.
Oh, wow.
So when I remarried my ex-husband, he said, why don't you get a job? I went, job? Why would I want to get a job? So I thought, oh, maybe I'll be a stockbroker. Never entered my mind that there weren't any women that were stockbrokers. A friend of mine from Miami's father owned a brokerage for Ronnie Rothstein. And I went to his father and I told him how much money I made in the market and how I made the money and how I did that. I said, I want to be a stockbroker. So they sent me to the New York Institute of Finance.
Mm-hmm.
Then I got divorced. So I went from living on Park Avenue with round the clock car and drivers making $75 a week as a trainee. And I did that for 6 months and I had a fabulous career. I did that for 10 years. And then after that, Prince Egon von Fürstenberg came to me and said that they wanted him to do this television show, cable. Cable was like hated. Nobody wanted to go on.
Right.
People go, ooh, cable. So they wanted him to do this cable television show and he wanted to bring me on as his co-host. So then I went off to the south of France and to the Grand Prix and kept thinking to myself, why aren't there people here shooting this? I mean, wouldn't that be great? We could shoot all this stuff. It would be terrific.
Yeah.
He called me that he didn't want to do the show. He wanted to cancel the show. So they called and said, we decided to make it your show. So that was sort of cool. And they wanted to shoot it in a studio, and I wanted to shoot it at Studio 54.
Got
so
it.
I we sort of parted ways. I did several shows, but then I took the show myself and started doing it myself. Because I just didn't want to shoot it in a studio. I wanted to shoot it on location.
And what was the concept for the show once it became the Nikki Haskell Show?
So it was a celebrity interview show. I did four mm-hmm. or five. So what I did is I went out and I shot all the fashion shows. I was the first person to put fashion on television. And it was in the 80s. So it was Halston and Calvin, you know, and Carolina Herrera. And
right.
Ralph Lauren had just started. So I had I shot all the fashion shows, and every show I put a fashion show into the show. And the show was four segments, the last one always being from a club.
Got it.
You know, so there was like four, every show was different. It never looked the same twice. Mm-hmm. Things always looked the same. I used to look at the Johnny Carson show and say, why does it always look the same? Why do they keep talking about the party? Why aren't they at the party?
Right.
So I was very lucky. I got Pan Am as a sponsor.
And incredible.
They gave me free tickets to go everywhere, these S1 passes. And I could just walk on first class and go to Paris and go to Rio de Janeiro. And I was, as a kid, I was like mesmerized by Carmen Miranda. Because when I was a kid, my parents used to take me to nightclubs. I'm from Chicago, and I used to go to the Chez Paris. And my first nightclub act that I ever saw was Carmen Miranda and Jimmy Durante. Okay. And I was Carmen Miranda-ized from that time on. So I wanted to go to Rio de Janeiro. So we went to Rio de Janeiro. I danced in the Samba School parades. I danced in the floats. I did that for about 10 years. And I had Richard and Robert DuPont work with me, and we just did everything. And then every club opened, and then studio closed. And 2 years later, it opened again. So I gave some of the greatest parties. I gave parties for Michael Jackson. I gave parties, you know, for everybody. It was really an amazing time.
So wait, can you explain to people what New York was like in those years, and also how you went from being a stockbroker, which, by the way, what an incredible job for a woman. But back then, that must have been a great place to meet not only men to possibly marry, but also just to meet everybody. I mean, I feel like that would have been a huge opportunity for you.
Right. So there were nothing. There were only five women on Wall Street. Wow. The class that I went to had 1,900 men. For some reason, I can't explain it. As you're doing things, sometimes you don't realize that you're the only one that's doing it.
Mm-hmm.
You know what I'm saying? It really never really entered my mind. So during that time, when I should have really found a new husband or worked on something. But then when the show started, I ended up going to Fire Island and dancing with the drag queens when I should have been in Southampton looking for a husband.
Sure.
So that was that. You know. So when the show started, my whole life changed because Studio 50, I was a disco junkie from day one. The first time there was ever a discotheque, which is one in Beverly Hills called the Daisy, which was the greatest. Mm-hmm. My husband said the only reason I remarried him is because he joined the Daisy. And that's true, actually. Mm-hmm. It's exactly why. And I lived to go dancing. I mean, that's all I cared about. Every night I went dancing and danced, but I never did any drugs, and I, you know, barely drank or whatever. So I was completely mesmerized by these clubs.
So you loved the experience. Did you witness the Studio 54 drug raids and all that stuff?
Well, the raid was done during the day.
Okay.
So I went opening night. I took Donald and Ivana opening night to Studio 54.
Wow.
I was at Studio 54. People used to say to me, where do you live? I live at Studio 54, but I keep an apartment on 68th Street. I was there, but it wasn't just studio. I went to Regine's. I went to La Club. I was like, could not get enough of it. I danced myself to death. You know, it was like, I could not live. I was so addicted to it. And I loved it so much. It was so much fun. And the television show was basically an extension of my life.
Right.
People say, oh, you know, she's obsessive. She has to. No, it's my job. I have to do this.
Right.
I have to go to these clubs because I'm throwing parties there.
When you started the show, is that when you said, okay, now I'm done with working on Wall Street?
Well, I had already quit by then.
Oh, you had? Okay.
I quit in 1960. Wait a minute. I'm getting my dates mixed. 1976, studio opened.
Okay.
And I quit in like 1966, 1976, 1977. And the show went on the air. I took a year off. I went to Los Angeles because I hadn't been home and hadn't seen my family.
Okay.
I spent some time there. Then I went back and then the show started. And then we went all over the world with the show.
Now, how long did the show last?
6 years.
Okay.
We went everywhere. I could not have had more fun. I mean, it was, you know, I had to take 11 people with me when I shot a show and 150 pieces of equipment.
Right.
Not to shoot it on your iPhone.
Yeah, then, right.
And then I had to edit it. And I edited, I didn't push the machine, but I edited every inch of the show. It took 6 hours.
I get it.
An hour. It was
and you loved every minute of it, right?
Loved every minute of it.
Yeah. So is that part of what you're thinking of getting into now? Like, is that something that you ache for and you love doing?
You know, I love doing a lot of things. And of course I'd love to do another show and I'm looking forward to doing the podcast, but you know, I work with this great group, you know, the Limitless Company, and they're the ones that do my TikToks and my Instagrams. And they took me, I had 5,000 on TikTok and 10,000 on Instagram. And now I have 500,000, you know, on each one. And it's because of them. I mean, they just completely have changed my whole profile. And now I'm an influencer, a grand influencer.
Amazing.
So it's great. You know, every day is an adventure.
Right.
I mean, I'm an overly optimistic person. I think that everything's fabulous. You know, I don't want to hear anything's bad or ugly or dirty or anything. And I live in this dream world that everything is great. I mean, I'm realistic about, you know, life in general, but I'm always looking for the best time and the most amount of fun.
Okay. So I want to ask you a question because you were so back then you were an investor, am I correct? In StarCaps, and you were very into weight loss thing that I've heard you talk about. You said it was unbelievable, completely worked.
It was the greatest product of all times.
Do you feel like there's anything on the market today that just is the same type of thing?
No, there's nothing like StarCaps was a natural diuretic. It wasn't really a diet pill. It didn't kill your appetite.
Oh, it just flushed you out.
Totally. But like you could lose 5 pounds in one day.
It
was
a natural
diuretic. And what happened was the football players that were taking steroids were taking my product to get rid of the steroids. So there were 9 teams that were caught. And when they tested them, they came up positive for StarCaps, and they blamed me and they sued me. The NFL, 9 teams sued little me. I had $30 million worth of product liability. Nobody stood behind me. I had to go through bankruptcy. I had to destroy $17 million worth of product.
Wow.
It's the most devastating. They just, you know, threw me under the table for no reason. They had to blame somebody, so they might as well blame me.
If you felt stuck trying to lose weight, you're not alone. Enter Weight Loss by Hers. It's designed to support you in reaching your goals. And Hers now offers access to an affordable range of FDA-approved GLP-1 medications, including the Wegovy pill and the Wegovy pen. With Wegovy at Hers, lose up to 20% or more of your body weight when combined with diet and exercise. It helps you regulate your appetite, eat less, and keep weight off. Plus, Wegovy is the first GLP-1 available in a pill, so there are no needles needed. Everything is 100% online through Hers. You'll connect with a licensed provider who will determine if treatment is right for you. If prescribed, your medication is delivered right to your door, no insurance necessary. And it doesn't stop there. Weight Loss by Hers goes beyond medication by offering access to 24/7 messaging with your care team and tons of in-app lifestyle and nutrition tips like recipes, meal plans, fitness videos, sleep content, and more. Even better, with a range of affordable GLP-1 options, Hers makes it simple to find an approach that fits your needs and your budget, if eligible. You'll get a treatment plan personalized to you and unlimited dosage changes as needed. It's weight loss designed to work with your life. Ready to reach your goals? Visit forhers.com/women to get personalized, affordable care that gets you. That's forhers.com/women. forhers.com/women. Weight loss by Hers is not available in all 50 states. Wegovy is the registered trademark of Novo Nordisk AS. To get started and learn more, including important safety information, Wegovy clinical study information, and restrictions, visit forhers.com.
Wow. So, well, I know you don't, you're an optimistic person and you don't like to talk about things that are terrible, but I feel like that's really relatable.
So terrible.
If I could ask you about that for a second, how did you get through the day? How did you climb out of that barrel and reinvent yourself? Because that's a feeling that a lot of people are going through now.
I'll tell you, you know, because I'm really strong. It even surprises me and how strong I am. The day that I found out that this happened, which is like a complete shock to me, that night, I'll never forget, I went out with Clive Davis and we went to Nobu for dinner. And I sat there and the tears were streaming down my face. Just thinking about it makes me cry. I had given my life to this product. And it was Cindy Adams, by the way, that put it in the paper. I went into the store and it was this fabulous Boyd's chemist in New York. I went in with Liza Minnelli and my girlfriend, Lorna Luff, with her sister. And I was making a pitch because it was $100 a bottle for a product made out of papaya and garlic. It was a hard sell. Mm. You know, why am I paying $100 for it? And I never changed the price. I never changed anything. So I went in. And as I was in the middle of giving my sales pitch, a woman yells out, "I've been robbed." So now here I am making my sales pitch. And everybody's around this woman who's been robbed and whatever. So I called Cindy and I told Cindy. Cindy is one of the greatest. I love Cindy. Cindy put it in the paper. Everybody picked it up, hard copy, this, that. And they actually pole vaulted my company in the first place. But I used to go door to door by myself to every one of these drugstores trying to put this product in there. It was really tough.
Yeah.
I mean, it took me 4 or 5 years to get it really. Then I got it into General Nutrition Center. Of course, they wanted me to make it 2 bottles for. I would never change the price. I would never make it $199.95. It was $100. There were no discounts. If you bought 12, you got a bottle for free. And that was it. And I never changed it. And it was an amazing. I had a 70% repeat business. So every 2 weeks, I bought a bottle of Star Caps. It was
fabulous. That's incredible. So when you were doing that.
Wiped out like you can. How did I get through it?
Yeah.
I danced my way through it. I got dressed every night and went out. And if I was unhappy or I was crying, I went out anyway.
Right.
I never punished myself. Now, I don't punish myself. You know, I'm very superficial. I never put myself down or put myself off. I got dressed every night and went out and went to every party and went to everything and got through it. And it was a nightmare.
Right.
Because I had to file personal bankruptcy and corporate bankruptcy. You know, I just about lost everything. But somehow I didn't lose everything. I kept my apartment in New York, kept my apartment in L.A., and I had to start all over again. You know what? I'm a big girl.
What did you do to start over again? What was your next concept or thing?
So I invented a piece of exercise equipment called this. All my products were I had billboards all over Sunset. Like the most fabulous. Hunter, go in the other room and grab one of my billboards. It's up on the top of it. I'll show you something. I created, you know how like the Hollywood sign? Mm-hmm. I created a Star Cap sign. They were like hysterical. They tried to sue me. They tried to do it. So I had billboards all over Sunset at parties. Here.
It's two right here.
Oh, here's two. Okay. So these are my billboards.
Oh, amazing. Amazing. Who's the model on it? I can't see.
Me, of course.
Is it you? Oh my gosh, I can't see. That's amazing.
Sitting on the top of every billboard.
I love it. So let me ask you a question, because if this happened in this day and age with all this cancel culture, I feel like, you know, all these billboards would have been taken down. People would have said, oh, we can't associate ourselves with Nikki. But it seems like you
everybody realized that I'm the one that got screwed.
Right, right.
You know, the football players were taking steroids. There was no reason to take the Star Caps unless you were taking steroids.
Right.
You never hear anything today about people taking steroids. That's the end of that story. Right. And I had 9 attorneys. Nobody knew anything what they were doing. It was the most, you know, it cost me $20 million. And I had to destroy $17 million worth of product. Thank God I had an attorney in Los Angeles completely screwing me over. finally one day came to me and said, you know, I think you better get an FDA criminal attorney. I went, why? This is years later. Because this guy never got rid of the star caps. They were sitting in storage. And they said, they're gonna indict you. I said, what do you mean they're going to indict me? This is over a couple of years ago. So this guy never took care of anything. I found, thank God, I found this Chris Mancini, who was a criminal attorney in Miami, and he saved me. I mean, I had to go to court. The guy at court said to me, you know, David, whatever the name of my attorney was, if it wasn't for him, this would never have happened, because he completely screwed me over, never took care of anything.
Oh, wow.
So it was, you know, life goes on. I'm a big girl. You know what I'm saying? Actually, my life really hasn't changed that much. Did I lose any friends along the way? I don't really think so. You know, friends are like bus stops. There's one on every corner. If you don't want to be my friend, there are other friends. But I mean, it didn't just happen in one day. This went on for years. I think I was like 6 or 7 years I had to go through this.
Right, right. Well, I love all the content that you and your Limitless people make. So I guess one of them would be, in this circumstance, what would be your advice for people that feel like their life is about to end because of something going on and they have no options? What would be your biggest piece of advice then?
Get dressed and go out and have a good time. Don't punish yourself. Don't punish us. I never punish myself. I never get mad. You know, nobody gets mad at you. Why are you getting mad at yourself?
Right.
You know what I'm saying? I didn't do anything wrong. I got screwed. So shit happens. You know, my life didn't change at all. I still went with my friends in the summer on their yachts. I still went to this place and that place. I mean, of course, I took a big hit financially.
Yeah.
But I made it back and I did lots of different things. And I've always been successful in the market and I've always been successful with what I'm doing. And I just somehow pulled it together and pulled myself out of it and overdressed and went out every night.
Okay. I love that. I never
feel sorry for myself.
Yeah. Okay. I want to go back to your nightclub days. Cause I don't think a lot of people understand what Studio 54 and El Morocco and all these amazing clubs that New York City had, what they were like, because I don't really think there's anything like that nowadays. Can you explain?
Nothing like anything. Yeah. We live in a really boring time. First of all, there's no great artists. Okay. There's no great performers.
You don't like Taylor Swift?
I do like Taylor Swift. There's one here, one there. You know what I'm saying? But, you know, but I'm talking about as a vet, there was the Beatles, there were the Rolling Stones. There was lots of great music.
I think Michael Jackson.
Yeah. You know, Michael Jackson was a friend of mine, you know, and I launched a Thriller on the bridge of Studio 54.
I know. I was going to ask you about that. Tell me about that night.
Well, that was the... So I was giving a party for Yul Brynner, who was in The King and I the last time he was on Broadway. And Yul Brynner was best friends with Michael Jackson. Mm-hmm. Because Michael Jackson, when he would travel around and The King and I was playing in whatever city they were playing in, Michael became friendly with him. Mm. So when I was giving this party for Yul Brynner, he said, Michael Jackson's coming to this party. So Mark Fleischman at the time owned Studio, Steve Rebell, and Ian had their days that were finished at Studio. So we did Studio back just like the set from The King and I. Mm. It was incredible. So we had a seated dinner for 100 people. And everybody kept telling me Michael Jackson was coming. But, you know, you must know as well, the last thing you want to do is tell somebody Michael Jackson's coming, and then he doesn't show up. Then it screws up the whole thing.
Right.
They called me that afternoon. They said, you have to get this juice from this place and this thing. So I had everything decanted for him. And he came in and he sat down and he said, nobody had videos in those days. It was like prehistoric time, you know, but we had video equipment at Studio. He said, I have the disc for Thriller. Can you play it? So I went upstairs and we put it in the machine and they dropped the screen. And they played Thriller. People almost died. They didn't even know Michael Jackson was there.
Oh, my gosh.
It was unbelievable. So there we were on the bridge of Studio 54.
Wow.
As the bridge came out and the screen dropped. And we played Thriller.
Oh my God. And what a video that was in a time where people really weren't doing them. I mean,
there were no videos.
I mean, yeah, videos, that must have been incredible.
I don't even know. Videos were just starting. I mean, you have to understand.
MTV must have been just starting, right? Or
it's funny that you should, I'm just trying to think. I'm sure that MTV must have just started right around that in the 80s.
Right, because I remember it was the first time I got a TV in my room. Well, got a TV like right there as a kid, and watching, for me, it was like George Michael, Madonna, Whitney Houston, and Michael Jackson. And by the way, I'm stuck in that era because those are the only things I absolutely love. And like Wham, maybe it wasn't George Michael, it was Wham. So like, and Hall & Oates, like those were my jams.
I interviewed Hall & Oates, I was friendly with Michael.
Yeah. So what was Michael's personality like? I mean, people say a lot of things about him.
So that night, you know, that was like one of the most memorable nights of my life, that night at Studio 54. But then a lot of time went by, and I was best friends with Robert Evans. He did The Godfather and Chinatown and Rosemary's Baby.
Okay.
And he had just done this thing called The Kid Stays in the Picture, which was it was the documentary that brought documentaries into the forefront.
Okay.
And it was up for, he was being honored at the Palm Beach Film Festival. So my friend Al Melnick had, Michael Jackson was staying at his house. So Brett Ratner, myself, Michael Jackson, I don't know why I can't think of his name. The actor that was in The Piano. I mean, I know him so well. Anyway, we all went to this big dinner at the Palm Beach Film Festival. So I went up to Mike. I said, I'm sure you don't remember me. You know, I'm the one that, you know, gave the party at Studio 54. Oh, yes. He says, will you come with me tomorrow? I'll have the car pick you up. You're the only one I can go shopping with. So they pick me up, and I go to, and Michael's in the car, and he's dressed like Spider-Man. He's got this Spider-Man costume on. I said, Michael, what are you doing? Why are you wearing this costume? He said, nobody will recognize me. I said, you've got to be kidding. You step 1 foot out the door, and 1,000 people like surrounded him, right? So it was hysterical. So it was just the two of us. I don't even think he had a bodyguard, now that I think about it. Oh. We walked through this big shopping mall in Palm Beach, it was the most insane. I felt like I'm really with him. It was the most hysterical thing ever, right? So I spent a lot of time with him that trip, and then he came back one other time. I'll tell you an interesting story. So actually, it was on my birthday. It was on May 17th. My friend Al Melnick gave this party in Palm Beach in Miami. See, the first time Michael was there, he had his kids with him staying at the house.
Okay.
This time, he brought a bunch of little boys.
Oh.
And he was in a roped-off area. There was a lot of, it was this man's birthday party.
Mm-hmm.
So I see this kid sitting on Michael's lap, right? He's got a hat on and a shirt and tie and everything. And this woman sitting over, they said, who are you? You know, I'm very inquisitive. She goes, I'm his mother.
Oh.
I said, well, really? And where do you live? She said, I live at Neverland with my daughter. I knew exactly that this was going to be a major problem.
Mm-hmm.
So I got up and I went over to my friend Al. I said, you have to get rid of this woman. I can see that this is trouble lurking. And 6 weeks later, the whole thing came out about this boy. And that was the boy.
Oh, wow.
It accused him of molesting him, was sitting right there. I spotted it immediately.
Right. So in spending all this time with him, well, here, my first question is, did he have a good sense of humor? Was he very smart?
He was really smart. He tried to pretend like he wasn't smart.
Hmm.
See, my girlfriend, Suzanne DePass, discovered him. You know Suzanne?
No, I don't.
She was the president of Motown. They just inducted her into the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame.
Oh, wow.
So she discovered Michael. So she knew him quite well as a little boy. I only knew him on a moment by moment kind of basis. And I'm sure that if that hadn't happened, that he wasn't arrested and went through all that, then we would have stayed friends and I would have seen a lot more of him. But then the whole tide turned, you know?
Right. Do you think, knowing him, that these things that he was accused of, do you think he could have possibly done them?
I have no idea. I would, you know, where there's smoke, there's fire.
Right.
Who knows? I mean, I don't want to say yes. I don't want to say no. All I know is the person that I knew, that I spent time with, was fabulous.
Yeah. Yeah.
I'm not going to judge. Okay. Plus, I don't know the facts.
Right.
You know, we know that there's more gossip than there is reality. But you know, where there's smoke, there's fire.
So that is, all of those things are true. I will tell you something. I moved out of New York recently, a year and a half ago, let's say, to Palm Beach. But before I left, I took my daughter to MJ, the yes, show on Broadway.
Yes.
By the way, one of the most fabulous shows ever, again, because I'm a Michael Jackson music fan and always will be. But what I noticed being in the crowd was that there were parts to it that were so good and so moving, and the music was so good. You felt like in any other place, like at Hamilton, people are standing up and cheering, they're singing along. But I noticed that I felt like people didn't feel like they were allowed to do that. Like they felt like it was almost, you could enjoy it. You paid for the ticket, but you couldn't be like, I love this guy, you know?
So I went opening night. Mm-hmm. Okay, and there were, I'd say maybe 20 people out there with signs. They said, how can you go to a play about a pedophile and this and that? And Paris, his daughter, I mean, just happened to walk in when I walked in. Mm-hmm. And when she walked out, we walked in, she was in tears. Okay. Right. A lot of people said, oh, you know, it didn't really go into that. You know, it didn't go into any of the things that happened. I said, it's a musical. Give him a break. You know, it stopped before anything. I mean, the music, Michael Jackson's music will live on forever.
Forever. You know, and by the way, I hope it does. He's one of the most fabulous, you know,
and the Beatles, artists. And I mean, his catalog is worth $1 trillion.
Right.
But, you know, outside of the United States, nobody cares. You know,
right.
Throughout the world, Michael Jackson's music resonates more than you can possibly imagine.
Right.
And a lot of people were very skeptical about putting money into MJ because they didn't think that they thought that there would be a lot of backlash. But after the first night, people realized how great it was. Still running.
Yeah. You know? Yeah, I couldn't remember if it was still running, but I wouldn't
it's
be surprised.
All over the world. It's going on the road show now.
Right. All right. Is it okay if I ask you about some scandals, just your opinion, even if you don't have any ties to these people?
Okay, I probably do.
Because you've been around, you know, for so long, I feel like you would have an opinion at least. We've covered Studio 54. We've covered Donald Trump. So I'm going to not ask about those anymore. What do you think of Paris Hilton's rise to fame? Someone who is, you know, a different generation than you, but, you know.
I love Paris Hilton. First of all, I'm very, very close to the Hiltons.
Okay.
I was there when Paris was in a baby buggy. And Nikki was in her crib. So I am very partial to her. I think she's fabulous. She opened the Jingle Bell Rock last week, singing a song. She was fabulous. I am her biggest fan. She is so special. You have no idea how hard this girl works. She has a perfume company that does $22 million a year. She works every day on a product, every day on a thing, every day on a television show. She's got two of the cutest little babies of all times and a fabulous husband. So I'm like her biggest fan.
I love it.
And Kathy, I'm mad for Kathy. Kathy and I gave Kathy her 19th birthday or 21st birthday party at Studio 54. So I have nothing but accolades for them. I'm crazy about all of them. In fact, this week I'm going to two parties at their house.
Oh, good. Okay.
I'm the biggest fan of all times.
Good. Princess Diana's death. Where were you when that happened? And were you surprised by the whole thing?
Well, you know, I was friendly with Dodie Fayed.
Oh, you were?
Yeah. And actually, I know exactly where I was at the second that I found out about it. I was in my apartment in Los Angeles. And do I think she was murdered? Is that what you want to know?
Yeah, like where were you? What were your thoughts on it?
You know, it's one of those unanswered crimes. But I think that it very possibly she could have been murdered. There's so many extenuating circumstances. The car was an old car. The driver was drunk. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
There's so many things. And we know that, first of all, Dodi Fayed's father wanted more than anything in the whole world for him to, because he wanted a Muslim child in the royal family. That was like his goal. He really pushed this marriage. And I knew Dodi quite well, and Dodi really wasn't up to her standard.
Oh, interesting. What do you think of the way that people treat Harry and Meghan?
I'm not a big fan of Meghan's. I think that she married him intentionally to get rid of, address her heart, her knocks for the royal family. I mean, when you marry somebody that's in the royal family, you go with the program. That's right. How I feel about it. I feel it. I think I'm sure if you give it his comeuppance, he'd get on the next plane and go back to London and go back to working with his family. That's what he is. He's part of the family. I feel sorry for him.
You do.
He doesn't have any friends, you know. I mean, the royal family is a network. Lives together, plays together. Everything is together. Do you know what I'm saying?
Yeah, for sure.
He stepped out of his comfort zone, and I don't think she's really made him happy. I can't imagine, because every time they keep taking away, you know, this and taking away that. And I think that, you know, and I have great respect for the royal family, and I understand how traumatic it must be for them not to have him there. I mean, I hate to, you know, make a guess, but I think sooner or later that they will get divorced and he'll go back and they'll embrace him again and he'll be back where he should be or where he wants to be, I think.
That's an interesting prediction. I mean, I sort of read it as, I mean, so many people dislike them, but I really was trying to read more into the psychological part of it, that he was so screwed up basically by what happened with his mother. He loved her so much. And to see this woman that he loves, you know, treated in the same way of the paparazzi coming after her, I thought he just felt like he needed to retreat because he was scared of that happening again. But it seems bigger than that, because it just seems like they're trying to make so much money and nobody likes them. And he's been completely torn from his family. It seems terrible.
Right. That's exactly right. And then, yeah. And his brother,
I think you're right. He'll end up back there.
His brother has made it very difficult for him, and rightfully so. You know, it's hard to embrace someone that sort of slapped you in the face and left.
Right. Right. You know,
I have great respect for the royal family, but it's like anything else. You don't want to put yourself in harm's way. And you don't want to have anybody, I don't know. To me, I think it's really screwed up. I think if given his chances, he'd be on the next plane back to London.
Right. Right. Okay. What were your thoughts on the Madoff scandal? Did you know anybody that was involved with Bernie?
Ironically enough, I never knew Bernie Madoff. When I left, don't forget, when I left being a stockbroker, he wasn't around then. And I had met him. I'll never forget. I went to dinner one night. I have a lot of male friends. We went to dinner. We went to, where did we go to dinner? Primola. And he came over to the table and everybody was sort of like bowing to him and everything. I'm like, who is this guy? He said, you don't know who Bernie Madoff is? I said, no, who is he? And they told me the story. I was surprised that I'd never heard of him. And then when the shit hit the fan, there were a lot of my friends, unbeknownst to me, that did take a big hit. I think a lot of them got some of their money back.
Mm-hmm.
And it was such a scandal. I don't know how anybody could have pulled that off. It was so bizarre.
Right.
Greed. It's all greed.
Greed. You know,
it seems too good to be true. It usually is. To get 25% on your money, you know this. You know that that's not going to work.
Right. Speaking of crossing paths, when you were a stockbroker, I know that you knew Jeffrey Epstein, but you want to tell people your thoughts. Do you think he was murdered or you think he killed himself?
I think he was murdered.
I do too.
And
too big of an ego. Why would he kill himself? He would think that he could get out of it.
Right. That's exactly right. You got that right.
Yeah. I don't know how could anybody would think that a guy like him would kill himself. That's just crazy.
Okay. So I lived around the corner from Jeffrey Epstein. I live on 68th Street. He lived in the Solo building on 67th. And Bob Meister, who was in the insurance business, introduced me to him. Mm-hmm. He was very good looking at the time. I'm talking long before this ever happened, maybe 20 years. Mm-hmm. And we became, you know, friends-ish. And one night I called, and this is what he told me. He told me that he was a concert pianist and that he was a corporate spy, and he worked for corporations trying to find out who was stealing money within the corporations. He told me one other thing, but I can't remember what it was. So one night I was invited to this big event, and he said to me, will you take me to this event? I'd like to go. I said, okay. The only picture that was ever taken of me with Jeffrey Epstein is in the documentary. The one picture ever that was ever taken. I saw the documentary and went, I can't believe that this picture's in it. Anyway, so halfway through dinner, he turned to me and he said, you know, I have to go now. I said, excuse me? What do you mean you have to go? He said, look at it this way. Just pretend I'm a doctor and I have to go make a house call. I was like, so why did you come with me to begin with? So he left. He called the next day to apologize. I never accepted his apology, and I never spoke to him again. Right after that, Herr Gieselin's father mysteriously died. Right. Fell off the boat. No way he could have fallen off the boat. He weighed like 350 pounds. So he was murdered, too. He was in a lot of problems. So on the front page of every newspaper in the world was a quote from me. Nikki Haskell said, you know, it's always a Nikki Haskell said. I'm always, when in doubt, it's Nikki Haskell said. But I didn't know anything about, don't forget, he was in jail once for this. Mm. And then he got out, very arrogant. Yeah. And I never saw him after that night, that night that I went to that event with him. And as things unraveled and this pedophilia thing and this, you know, trafficking of young girls happened, and they put him in jail. Of course, they killed him.
Right.
It's hard to strain twice.
Yeah, right. Okay, what is your perspective on the Me Too movement?
Well, you know, so what it's very interesting is I think it sort of backfired for women, if you really want to know the truth. You know, it's taken, you know, I was one of the first women on Wall Street and had a fight. Not really. I mean, I've never really had an identity crisis or never had any problem with men. But then again, I don't go up to somebody's hotel room at 2 o'clock in the morning to get a script. This is how it is. There are two women. One stands in front of the mirror and says, I'd really like to be an actress. And the other one says, I'll do whatever it takes. You know, and some people just don't care what they do to get to the top. And that you can't put them down for it, but it's just a fact of life. I think that Hollywood has always been known for the casting couch story. This goes back to now, of course, you hear stories about Judy Garland and this and that. And, you know, I've got great friends. Joan Collins went through, told me how she had to fight her way out of so many different places. So when the Me Too thing happened, actually, within a week, I had gone it was one for television. What's that?
Isn't that the Emmys? The Oscars? No.
No, not the Emmys. Is it the Emmys?
The Emmys.
Okay. So I went to the HBO party. I used to go to the HBO party all the time at the Hilton Hotel, which was like the most glamorous. They gave the best parties for the Academy Awards and everything. And all the girls came dressed black in solitude, you know, for this whole thing. And I remember, I'm not going to mention any names, these two very important girls came up to me and were very hostile and very aggressive about this and that and this and that. And I said, you know, this is going to backfire. Mm. I said, because I'm telling you exactly what's going to happen. Men are not going to be hiring women in high positions. They're not going to trust women anymore. Listen, it's a tough game out there. I'm not saying that these guys aren't predators, but I'm saying you put yourself in a position. My entire life, I never got in a situation like that. Because I never let myself into it. And, you know, a lot of people don't care how they get to the top. When you're at the top, you don't remember how you got there. All you remember is that you're there. And I think look at society today. Look at the dating. I mean, it's the first time in the history of the world that more people died than were born. So the dating, marriage, regime has completely collapsed.
Mm.
And a lot of it stems from this Me Too thing. Guys don't want to take girls out. They don't want to get in trouble. You know what I'm saying? They just as soon call a hooker.
Right, you know? Right. I see what you're saying. Yeah.
You know what I'm saying? It's backfired. And in such a way that, I know people that are have major corporations, they won't even hire a woman now.
Right.
Yes, there are women in high positions because there are more women that are successful now than men. But they're usually in their own position. They're in their own companies, in their own, you know, jobs. But the working girl that's working her way up, listen, when a guy gets divorced, he ends up with the secretary, the nanny, the trainer, or your best friend.
Right.
You know True. What I'm saying? So it's up to the girls. And believe me, there's a lot of girls. I had a date, and so funny, because I have a lot of male friends. We went out for dinner the other night. There was four of us. And me, okay? So we were sitting in a booth, and this really cute guy was sitting on the end of the booth, and another cute guy, this girl crawled over the top back of the booth. I mean, like, what are you doing? She said, oh, I want to meet. I said, who are you? I mean, they didn't know who's my boyfriend or my husband. I mean, women are very on the go here. You know, you see these girls out, they're all looking for guys, and there aren't a lot of, the guys aren't interested in the way they used to be.
No, well, because there's so many options now with dating apps and all these different ways to meet. And then there's all these, you know, there's different arrangements for how people, it's not this white picket fence and marriage thing anymore. It's, you know, so many options of sugar daddy, sugar baby.
I'm surprised at how many weddings I'm invited to each year. I'm surprised that there's so many people still getting married, but they really aren't because it's way down.
Right.
Women today have decided they'd rather have a dog than a husband. And these guys are. And you know, the reality is a lot of men are not nice to women. You get women out of desperation get married. They have no other choice. So they marry somebody and the guy is mistreating them. And then they have children and he's cheating. And it's a vicious cycle. You know, right. there's no perfect situation. Do you know what right. I'm saying? I mean, my entire life, I've been looking for my knight in shining armor. Do you know, I've always had this high goal, some fabulous person is coming, going to come and take me away from all this, but it's never going to happen.
Right, right. Well, what are your, I mean, I've seen it a lot on your Instagram. What are you dating? What does your knight in shining armor look like? And what would be your advice for dating right now?
You know, I think that probably in this day and age, really the dating sites are the best way to go. Mm-hmm. I have terrible taste. Everybody I look at looks like an axe murderer. So you can't go by me. I mean, I'm not, the problem is that I'm not like a regular person. I don't lead a regular life. I'm here, I'm there, I'm in Florida, I'm in New York. The other night I went to this amazing Elton John thing. Then the night before that, I went to another big guy. You know what I'm saying? It's hard for a man
to keep up.
It's not necessarily keeping up. I don't even think they have them want to do it. I mean, I remember in the old days, I'm talking about in Studio 54 days, if I dated somebody, they didn't want to go to Studio 54. I had a boyfriend that cried, I don't want to go to Studio 54. Bye-bye.
Right.
You know what I'm saying? I mean, so I've always led my life to please me.
Right. Well, that's a great way to live your life, though. There's plenty of girls that don't know how to do that. When I was talking to Cindy Adams, she was so upset about the difference between, you know, a long time ago when people really cared about how they dressed and now. She's like, women don't wear clothes. It's disgusting. She was really pissed off about women.
She's not wrong. You know, yeah. I'm overdressed when I'm naked. I am always dressed up. Do you know what I'm saying? I wouldn't even think about going out in the house or out in the morning without makeup. I wouldn't even think of it. Right. I wouldn't enter. But most people, you see, and it's interesting, you see these actors and actresses walking around with sweatshirts and things. None of these girls own a dress. When they go to an event, some designer puts them in a dress. Every dress that I wore in my television shows, those are my dresses. You know what I'm saying? Because I did put fashion on television, a lot of the designers gave me a lot of the clothes. But I'm saying, and I bought a lot of them. But I mean, these girls, you could open up their closet, there's nothing in it. A pair of blue jeans. I don't even own a pair of blue jeans or sweatpants. Right. And that's the way it is. This is a sweatshirt, but it's beaded.
Oh, I love it. But has your view of love and relationships evolved? Like, I know you said when you went to Studio 54, if a guy didn't want to go, you would be like, okay, see you. But now, would it be nice to have a man that's home waiting for you?
I would love it. I would love to. I haven't had a date in 10 years. I'm out every night. Don't get me wrong. Mm-hmm. I mean, I have parties and dinners. I mean, this week is, and every week when I'm in New York, I was out every night for a month and a half. I wasn't home one night. So I'm invited to a million things. I'm invited to a lot of parties, but that's not normal. Do you know what I'm saying? I'm in the minority.
Yeah.
I mean, I have girlfriends of mine that are sitting there like table for one. Right. You know, how do you meet somebody? The only way you're going to meet somebody is, the best way is to have somebody introduce you.
Yeah.
No one has ever introduced me to anyone, ever.
Really?
Because they think I know everyone.
Right, right. And well, you probably do. You need to find someone maybe who's completely different than you, you know?
I don't want somebody completely different.
I know, but that's the thing. You got to find a powerful man who's maybe powerful in a different way.
You know, I'm open to suggestions. I mean, if I find someone attractive, I'm at a point in my life now I can basically do, well, I've always been able to do what I want to do. I'm not your regular person.
Right.
I'm easy to get along with. I'm fun to be with. I'm never in a bad mood. I'm always ready to go. Do you know what I'm saying? I mean, I dated a man. He said, I have to break up with you because you're never depressed. He said, I'm not used to it. He said, you're always happy. You're always having a good time. I find it very offensive. Who knows, you know?
Oh, my God. It's so hard. It's so hard to meet someone. I get it.
I never meet. And listen, now I'm 83 years old. I mean, I still think I'm 25.
Yeah.
And I always like younger men. I mean, I've had a lot of very young boyfriends. They've gotten older, but you know, they were 25 when I was 45.
Right. But so the ideal man right now, could he be in his 60s, late 60s, or that's too young?
Yeah, no, 60s is fine. 70s.
Okay.
There's a lot.
All right. Well, Nikki, I'm a connector just like you, and I do know a lot of people. So
I'm fun to be with. I come with my own jewelry.
Yeah. Well, that's a plus. Yeah.
I know, and I'm invited to a lot of places, so I can open the door for a lot of. I'm never going to fall in love with somebody who wants to stay home every night and watch television. That's never going to happen.
I got it.
How much in love I am with them. It's not. I like to go out. To me, staying home is like a punishment.
So you don't sit at home and watch like all the reality shows or something?
Never seen a reality show.
No way. You've never seen The Housewives? Not your thing?
I watched it once when I was at Kathy's house and she showed it. I'm never home. It's not that I'm against it. I'm just never home.
What's one decision you made that you wish you could go back and change and why?
You know, people have asked me that. I don't think I made any wrong decisions.
Okay. I mean, if they happened to be somewhat wrong, did you feel like you learned from them and it wasn't necessarily a bad thing?
Well, I didn't really learn by it. I didn't learn shit from them. The trick is to always be successful and have things work for you. People say, oh, you learn by your failures. You don't learn anything. They take up too much time. They're too hard. You know, I went through that Studio 54. I mean, I went through the Star Caps thing. I mean, that was devastating. I lost a fortune. And I lost, and it was my blood, sweat, and tears. I mean, you have no idea what I went through to get that product happening. But you know what? Life goes on.
Yeah.
I watch everything I eat. I'm always on a diet. You know, I don't drink soft drinks. I don't drink, you know, I mean, I really watch what I eat. It's your health. You want to stay alive as long as you can.
Right. So like, what's something that you love to eat?
Ice cream.
Oh, do you eat that every day? No.
I try not to. There's never been a pint of ice cream in my house ever.
Okay. So what's in your house that you snack on?
Nothing.
You keep your cabinets empty?
No, you could. The only thing you can get in my house is ketchup on your finger.
Okay.
Yesterday, I went to the grocery store and I bought something. I bought a couple little things because I'm never home. I'm always out.
Eggs, right.
Eggs in my and bananas.
Okay, I like that.
I don't eat cereal. I don't drink soft drink. But I'm out every night and I go out for lunch every day. And if I don't go out, I don't, you know, I watch. I'm always on a diet.
Always. Okay. Well, do you believe in the Ozempic craze?
You know, I do actually. I mean, I'm sorry that there are a lot of side effects, which there are. But It's interesting, it's changed the whole fast food market, and the candy industry is on a big decline, and all the chips and dips and all that stuff are on a decline. Because, you know, when I was in the diet business, okay, one out of every five people when I started were overweight. Now it's one out of two. They're killing us in the pizzas and the pasta and all that stuff. I don't eat any of that stuff. So the only problem with the Ozempic and the other problems, they don't change your eating habits.
Sure.
You're still eating the same crap. You're just not eating as much of it. If you change it so that you change your dietary habits, you know, from eating McDonald's, I would never eat that if my life depended upon it.
Yeah.
My mother brought me up. I was on a diet from the day I was born. Mm. I never had any fattening foods. I mean, I never eat pizzas. I mean, the other night we went out, I had a half a pizza, like one slice, like unheard of.
Right.
People have to take, you know, you can hire somebody to paint your house, fix your car, but you can't hire anybody to live your life. And it's up to you. You have to be your own guide. You have to watch what you eat. Everything you put in your body is like a factory. Whatever you put in it is how you're going to last. Okay, I'm never sick. I have perfect hearing. I'm 83 years old. I have perfect hearing. Most of my girlfriends wear hearing aids. I have no gray hair. I have all my own teeth. And I don't, I mean, but it's because I've always lived a very, listen, I'm out dancing every night. It's not like I'm sitting home. And I don't drink. I mean, I was always a very minimal drinker. Now I don't even drink at all.
Wow. Okay.
Until you take care of yourself, you know, I don't want to get sick. I mean, I've got so many projects that I'm working on. I'm working on a couple of television series. I'm doing a documentary. I'm working on three or four projects. I'm starting my podcast.
Okay. Let's talk about that. Yeah. What's your podcast going to be about? When is it going to come out? I want to hear all about it.
Shooting it now, it'll be like the Nikki Haskell show, you know, celebrity interviews. They want me to shoot more on location. I want to shoot it on location, but I'm coming out with my own line. Is my phone here? I want to show. Is it? Where is it? Oh, here it is. I'm coming out with my own line of t-shirts and sweatshirts, and they're really cute. Let me see if I can.
But you don't wear sweatshirts and t-shirts, do you?
Well, I would wear mine.
Okay. Oh. I was going to say, are they covered in sparkly stuff?
They're not sequined, but they are gorgeous. I'll show you what it looks like. Okay. Of course, I wear this. I don't think you can see this.
Oh yeah, it's a shoe. It's a high heel.
Shoe. It says, if I can't do it in high heels, I'm not interested.
Love it. Love it.
So these are Nikki-isms.
Well, but I think that's great. You know, it is such good advice for people that they should get up. Get to the next place. Keep moving. Don't get down on yourself. Get dressed up and take some pride in yourself. You know,
your mind is a sponge. Okay. Whatever you tell yourself, that's what you're going to believe. I get up every morning and say, I'm going to have the greatest day today. I'm going to do this. I'm going to do that. And I get, every day is an adventure. You never know who I'm going to run into. I run into the most amazing people along the way. Even in the grocery store, I run into. I mean, it's like life is an adventure. In the gas, wherever I am, I run into somebody. That's who you have to. And I'm proud of who I am. I'm proud to be 83 years old and live the life that I've lived.
I think that's a really good point too. There are so many women, even in their 20s, that keep saying, "Oh, I'm so old. I'm going to be 28 next year." And it's like, wait a minute, that's insane. And not only that, women that are in their 50s, 60s, 70s, you can't fight aging, right? So you should embrace who you are and stop trying to be someone young.
I have never been. I'm like the queen of the birthday parties. For my 80th birthday, Josh Flagg gave me a birthday party. For 150 people, a seated dinner, the Nikki Beach party. He had all the dishes and everything, dances. Okay, the Beverly Hills Hotel gave me a party, and my friend Eugenio Lopez, who owns the museum in Mexico, Humex, and he gave me a Studio 54 party. So I'm a girl that just loves her birthday. To me, it's a celebration. It's not a sign. I'm proud that I'm having my birthday. I'm thrilled to have a party. I mean, I gave the biggest parties. I had Brazilian dancers coming down the stairs at Studio 54. Every party I've ever had has been enormous. I love who I am, and I love my birthdays. And I thank God that I'm alive, and thank God that I have the friends that I have, and that I'm able to live the life that I lead. It's up to you. It's not up to anyone else. You know, it's funny because I answer, you know, I read every single one of my TikToks and Instagrams and everything. And I would have thought that at this time in our life, okay, with everything that's accessible to us, that people would have it more together than they do. How can they not? Who worries about your age? I mean, they say, oh, how am I going to deal with my 20s? Your 20s? 20s is like a breeze. You know, my 40s were fabulous. It's up to you. It's not up to, I mean, I never think about age. Age to me, I mean, I don't, people say, how can you tell any? What I used to do, people used to say to me, how old are you? I said, I'm in my late 20s. And it was funny, for years and years and years, it was never in my, when you pull up, you know, I mean, there's 5 million entries of me on Google. It never mentioned my age ever.
Right.
Only recently. Who cares?
Right. That's a really good advice and a good perspective. For your podcast coming up, is there someone that you are looking forward to reconnecting with that would be a great interview for you?
Well, I'm going to interview my friend Pamela Anderson. You know, she's got a new movie that just came out. Mm-hmm. Called The Last Showgirl, which is fabulous. I adore her. And I'm looking forward to interviewing the president.
Okay.
And I'm looking forward to interview, and I'm going to interview Billy Zane. He's got a new movie coming out. He plays Marlon Brando.
Oh, I love him. Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Looks just like it in the movie. And I mean, I'm very fortunate. I'm like you. I mean, you've done an amazing job. I mean, look at you paved the way with all these great people, and you're so pretty and you're so smart. You know, you're above the crowd. You know, okay. You don't have to, you know, listen, every day is a challenge. I mean, we get up, you know, we got to deal with the car. You got to deal with this. It's a problem with that. I mean, every day is something. But you just go through. I don't make a big deal out of anything. I was
As an influencer, do you have people that say terrible things to you on social media?
Very rarely. Every once in a while, they say, oh, you have too much Botox. And I say, oh, you should call my doctor. He gives great Botox. No, people, I must say, most of the people are really nice, and they're happy that I'm giving them good information.
I mean, yeah, I think you do give great Nickyisms. Is that what you called it?
Yeah, but you know, I mean, like, I read some of these people things. I mean, they say terrible things about Paris, but you have no idea how hard Paris works. Yeah. I mean, she opened Jingle Ball Rock the other night. She sang.
Yeah. Yeah.
How fabulous is that? You know, you have to rise to the occasion. You to sit around and criticize people is a complete waste of time.
Yeah.
You know, gossip
I
is
absolutely
gossip.
Agree. Reality,
and who cares? You have to care about your friends and your family. And if a friend does you in, sayonara.
See ya. Is there anyone you haven't met, or like a story of somebody that you follow that you really want to have on your show?
I'm looking to make my new best friend, Elon Musk. I think he's my new favorite.
Oh, I love that idea for you.
I think he is super. I'd like to meet him. And I'd like to, listen, I like to meet everybody. I mean, I'm a real people person. One of the things that bothers me is that I don't get to give as many parties as I used to give. I just gave a big party for a friend of mine a few months ago. And that's my favorite thing, is to give parties. Mm-hmm. I haven't been able to do it. My apartment in New York it just doesn't ever seem to work there. But I mean, I love being with people. I love going out. I go out for lunch every day and dinner at night. And you know, I mean, I'm not afraid to be alone. You know what I'm saying? I have no problem staying home. But to me, it's a waste of time.
Right. Just a quick question. Incidentally, do you prefer to do theme parties, or do you just love throwing a party?
Well, I mean, you always got to give a party for something or someone. Like, you know, I'll never forget, I gave a party for Eric Estrada, and Harley Davidson sent me six Harleys, and we hung them from the ceiling and into flower arrangements. You know, I've had Brazilian parties and birthday parties and you name it. But when I like to cook, I mean, I always have it. I have service for 100. You know, I used to give parties at my apartments. It was nothing.
Right.
I mean, I love giving parties. I love being with people. I love having people around and entertaining them. And I like mixing up the troops.
Right.
You know, different people doing different things. And you know, life is short. You have to be out with groups of people. Nowadays, you know, California is harder to socializing in New York. New York is bustling. There's a million places to go to. There's a million new clubs.
Right.
You know what I'm saying? So it's opportunities are because you're in, you're here. And then now people aren't even working in offices. So you can't even meet your coworkers or anything.
Very true. It's very hard to connect these days.
I don't know how anybody connects with anyone.
Yeah. All right. Let me ask you a last question here. You are somebody who is known now for giving so much good advice to people. Who is the person that gave you the best piece of advice, and what was that advice they gave you over the course of your life?
I had several people. Actually, Donald gave me a lot of good advice along the way. He was always very supportive of what I did and always gave me good advice. And my friend Robert Evans, who produced The Godfather, and this, I was with him almost every day. And he was very intuitive, and he was very, Donald gives you hard, cold facts. You know what I'm saying? I would ask him, should I do this? And he would break it down in such a way. But he was always the kind of person even if he didn't like what I was doing, he was inspiring me. One of the things is, if you ask too many people, they'll tell you, you can't do it, you can't go there. I don't even really ask anybody if I should do things or I shouldn't do things. There's some people's advice. Kathy Hilton is great. I love talking to Kathy. She's got great advice. Listen, she's got children and grandchildren and her husband, and now she's got crazy ass family. She's got a sister and this and that. She keeps it together like nobody's business. And she gives good advice, and she's a very clear thinker.
Okay. And was there one piece of advice that always stood out from any of these people?
My mother used to give me a lot of good advice. My mother gave me like the best advice. What was one of her? My mother used to say, it's not about the money, it's about the money.
Great advice.
No, but she always told me, how to handle people and to do things. And she was very intuitive, but you can give yourself your best advice. You can ask a million. I never ask people, should I do this? Should I go there? I just do it. Because everybody you ask, the easiest word to say is no. No, you right. can't do that. No, you can't have that. No, you can't go there. The one thing is that nobody ever wanted to be part of my television show. I never had a partner. You know what I'm saying? Which was great, because I would have had no show. They would have taken it away. It would have been lost. Thank God nobody ever wanted to be my partner. I got to do whatever I wanted to do. And now the shows are going on Roku. They're on Freevee now for the moment, and they're on Amazon Prime. I mean, I look at these shows, they're 50 years old. Yep. They're fabulous. The fact that I did them, I had no idea what I was doing. I created the whole genre. And there was no shows like mine on there. There was no Entertainment Tonight or Lifestyles. They all came from my show.
Right, right. Well, and it's interesting that they're still they're current today, the fact that people could watch them and love what they're about. And I can't wait to see you interview some of these people now to see how they've turned out decades.
How did you get started with your podcast?
With my podcast? Well, I got started with my podcast because the concept Misunderstood resonated with me, that my name had been in the news for so many years and I felt so misunderstood and reduced to a headline. And I wanted to change the narrative, but I didn't want to talk about the what happened, right? I didn't want to talk about why everybody was talking about me, but I thought it was a concept that resonated with people, that they felt misunderstood in their life. And at first it was interviewing celebrities that had been in scandals, that the media had narrated something that happened and they wanted to tell their truth. And so that's how it started, like a Cato Kaelin or a Greg Louganis, who was hiding that he was gay and it was HIV positive and hit his head on the board when he did that dive. Like people like that, I thought, were interesting people to follow up with, like a Lorena Bobbitt, remember? So that's how it started. And then it became more of this universal feeling of just wanting to talk to anyone. They could be an ordinary person with an extraordinary story that's really relatable to people. So that's how I got my start. And that's how it really took off.
You're so pretty.
Thank you.
And you have such a great way about you. So you can do basically anything you want, but people aren't like that.
It hasn't been easy. I know what you're saying, but I will tell you one thing. The best piece of advice, I was thinking about it when I was asking you, that I ever got was from my grandmother, the one I mentioned to you before, Pat Ucatel, who owned El Morocco. She was married to two very powerful men. And she, her advice to me one day unsolicited, she pulled me aside. I was quite young. And she said, no man is going to make your life. It is about you. Your happiness is about you. And the sooner you learn that, the sooner you will find happiness. Because she spent her whole life, you know, Doris Day was her understudy, and she decided to leave that and get married. And she felt like, even though her friends were Frank Sinatra and, you know, the Kennedys and, you know,
Nixon,
she felt like she lived a life that was unfulfilled. And she wanted me to know that I should not stick around just to be on someone's arm. I had to make a life for myself. So it's been...
Did you feel unfulfilled now?
I'm fine. So I have found my purpose in doing the show and connecting with people in that way. I have a 12-year-old daughter. I still feel like, you know, I would love one day to be married, to find my knight in shiny armor, like you were talking about. I finally have started dating somebody that really treats me in a way that I haven't been treated in a long time. And I feel very lucky to be, you know, involved with someone like that. And I haven't felt like that in a long time, but I met him online.
Which site?
It was 2.5 years ago on Bumble. And then we spoke on the phone. We never met. And then we live in the same kind of 30 minutes from each other here in Florida. And finally I agreed to meet him when I moved to Florida. So it was one of those friendships that had to go on.
I find it so tedious to be online with these people. They ask me the dumbest questions. I mean, and then I do something which is tacky. I do want to hear the tackiest thing that I'm embarrassed to say that I do this. They tell me about yourself. You know what I say? Do me a favor. Just Google me, which is such a tacky thing to say, but I do it anyway because I don't have time to tell somebody my whole life story.
I get
it. You want to read about it? Just Google me.
Well, Nikki, it's been a pleasure speaking with you. Tell people where they can find anything more that they want to see about you. Your
Big Nick, Big Nick Beverly Hills.
Love the name. And when will your podcast be airing?
Right after the first of the year.
Oh, amazing. Okay, I cannot wait for it. What's the name of it?
The Nikki Haskell Show.
Got it. Perfect. You can get it anywhere people get their podcasts?
Right now, that's a good question. But I think that to begin with, I think we're going to start putting it on YouTube.
Oh, okay, got it. Yeah. So it'll be a video.
You know, the Limitless coming, AJ and the guys and Hunter, who's here with me now, they're in charge of it. I mean, they are really, they're my backbone. They're the greatest. They do everything, you know, they really, and we work well together. The trick in life is being with people that you work well with, that you can interact with and accomplish something. It's terrible. I always end up doing everything on my own because I can never find anybody that I want to work with. And these men are just delicious. And we've had a great time together. And we've really, I'm so proud to be me and to be affiliated with them. And knowing how hard they've worked, they've really worked hard and put in a lot of time and energy to put me where I am now. You know, it's teamwork.
Yeah, absolutely. And you can see their hard work. You can see their hard work. You can see the work you put into it.
We're in touch with each other. Do you know what I'm saying? We work well together. And they are sensational. And I'm so honored to be with them.
Oh, that's amazing. Well, Nikki.
So I'm coming to Florida at the end of the month.
Oh, where?
I'm going to be in Miami, but I think I'm going to go down I have to come down to Palm Beach.
Have to, yes, because this is where it's at. And I would love to go to dinner with you or have a drink and we will commiserate about all these stories.
I'm trying to fit everything into the same, and then I'm going to the inauguration, which is on the 20th. It's right now I'm focusing in on getting my podcast up, getting my t-shirts, sweatshirts out, and I'm working on a big project that I'm very excited about. So, you know, I'm looking forward. This is going to be a great year, very challenging, but I like that. I like to be challenged every day. I like to get up and know that I've got 10 things that I have to do.
Last question. What's your New Year's resolution going to be?
Work harder and enjoy myself more.
I love that.
All times. Never give in, never give up, and never take no for an answer.
Love it. Nikki, thank you so much for joining us today. I wish you the best of luck. I look forward to meeting you in person.
I'll see you soon.
Thank you so much for listening to Misunderstood. I'm your host, Rachel Yucatel. Please be sure to subscribe to the show and give us a 5-star rating and review. You can support the show by joining our Patreon at patreon.com/misunderstood with Rachel Yucatel. Do you have ideas for the show or want to reach out? Email us at info@misunderstoodpodcast@gmail.com. That's spelled MISS understood. Thank you so much, and I'll see you next time. Misunderstood.